everybody. Welcome to the FNS Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, back with another bonus episode to talk about some Impact Wrestling Slammiversary.
Yeah.
Joining me, as always, my co-host and teenage son, Jackson. Say hi, Jack.
What's up?
So Jackson watched the pay-per-view with me. I don't think you took detailed notes or anything, right? But you're here to chip in some opinions and whatnot of what was a pretty enjoyable pay-per-view, I thought, not to reveal anything so far. But so I say we get right into it because we're pumping out a bunch of stuff today. So let's we'll just let people know they check out. We did do a bonus episode for our 1 year anniversary that will probably be up just before this one. So if you haven't had a chance, go and check that out. That's just Jack and I. We made a list of topics and sort of talked about them. No official review of any show, just some thoughts, things we'd like to see in wrestling, people we'd like to see in other companies, who we think are good, that kind of stuff. So if that kind of thing interests you, go ahead and check that out. We'd appreciate it. But I think we should get right into talking about this pay-per-view because we still got to come back and do some, I got to do my Ring of Honor. We got to do some Money in the Bank at some point. So those things will be coming up too. But right now we're going to take a look at Impact Wrestling's Slammiversary.
Yeah.
So the opening match for this is the one I was most interested in. So they decided it's a good choice as an opener here. We got the Ultimate X match for the X Division Championship, which is Trey Miguel versus Ace Austin versus Petey Williams versus Rohit Raju versus Chris Bay versus the defending champion, Josh Alexander. So if you're not an Impact fan, basically they put a structure up with like some...
They put scaffolding around each ring post, and then there's basically the same what the ring ropes is. They put two cables in an X
with the
and hang the
hanging.
Title in the middle.
And away you go. And there's basically, obviously,
no
it's no DQ. There's, they have to climb. They don't provide them ladders, so they actually have to climb the scaffolding or find some other way to do it. So this match, I will say Josh Alexander does end up retaining the title in what I would consider a pretty crazy match. I was really looking forward to this. So a few of the highlights, they pair off right away. Bay goes for the X right off the bat because, again, he's sort of in the middle. He's a man without a country in this. He's facing the heels and the faces, and he's kind of stuck in between. He gets taken out right away by everybody else, basically. There's a big release German by Alexander to Austin early. We get an inside-out Hurricane Rana from Petey Williams to Bay. The camera work was off a couple times here, so we miss a couple things. Ace gets shoved off the scaffolding, but the cameras barely catch that one. The replay show, he turned it into a moonsault onto the crowd, which looked pretty cool. And I guess, I don't know, my suggestion was maybe they haven't filmed anything with fans for so long that it threw off sort of the camera angles and camera work. But only a couple times in this match, and then I think they cleaned it up for the rest of the show. Bay at one point gets speared off of the cables by Rohit, who had sort of dodged a Hurricane Rana from Trey at that point. Rohit is sort of the comedy here. He brings like a large hook into the ring, and he's trying to just reach up and grab the title with the hook while everyone else is sort of distracted momentarily.
Or there's the one part where you're trying to use a rope to just like climb up from the middle of the ring.
Yes. So he's kind of trying various heel tactics as he would. So Rohit gets missile drop kicked off a chair by Trey as he was standing on the chair because he's trying to still reach the belt with this hook apparatus because he couldn't reach standing. So then he gets a chair, gets drop kicked off of it. Chain of submissions by five guys as Alexander sort of hanging from the X above them. Rohit hits the hanging Alexander with the thrown chair, which looked pretty cool. Bay hit a jumping cutter to Austin as he was moving across the cables, which looked pretty crazy. It wasn't the cleanest thing ever, but it was still pretty cool. Destroyer to Rohit, then to Trey. Petey's hanging from the cable. Alexander puts Bay up on his shoulders, and Petey hits a destroyer to Chris Bay from the cable off of Alexander's shoulders. I don't know if that's easy to visualize off of that explanation, but it was crazy to see. So I would recommend checking it out.
Mm-hmm.
Flatliner by Rohit to Trey as Trey is up on Alexander's shoulders. We get a top rope Spanish fly by Alexander to Trey. Then Bay and Alexander have a chop exchange hanging upside down from the cable. They unhook the belt and they're both sort of have their hands on it and are sort of wrestling it back and forth. Ace Austin gets up on the top rope, leaps away looking like he's going to grab it out of both of their hands, but they sort of lift it up to avoid him at the last second. Bay ends up falling. Alexander hangs on to the title, and after 16 minutes of craziness, I started out saying this was a great choice for opener, but honestly, how the heck do they follow this match? Right. Like,
yeah, it was pretty crazy. There's some pretty unique stuff.
Almost too hot an opener, right?
Right.
This match totally delivered. The addition of the crowd, even though it wasn't a huge crowd, it still helped a lot. These guys killed themselves in this match. There were so many innovative and creative spots. I'm really happy Alexander retained, as I think he should have a long run and dominate a variety of different matches, because he's not your stereotypical X Division competitor. Usually think of them as smaller and more high-flying, but Alexander's more of a technician and a stronger guy. This division continues to be the best thing in this company. I thought this was an amazing match. Like, was it a spot fest? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with that.
There are some cool spots. There are some unique ones.
If you're going to entertain me like this, yeah, there were a couple things with people on other people's shoulders that they were pulling off. Right. I thought this was a fantastic start. Like, I would classify this as a must-see match. Like, I'm telling you, you should go watch it if you didn't see it already, right?
Right.
You enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, right? I really liked it. It was just a crazy opener, and it was really entertaining, yeah.
Yep.
There's some unique bits that they really... You had to keep watching, right? You had to pay attention.
And those guys are all pretty amazing, and in that kind of match, they had a lot of leeway and got really creatives. It was great. So Gia Miller then interviews Don Callis outside of Kenny Omega's dressing room. Callis complains about Dreamer talking about firing Callis and about the no DQ stipulation in the match since it favors Sami Callihan, so obviously they're upset about this. If it wasn't for Impact, Callis says Sami would be in prison and that Sami is a sociopath. Sami may be dangerous, he says, but Omega is a god and Sami won't be able to kick out of a one-winged angel. Is that foreshadowing? We'll see.
It is. It always is.
After this match, Callis's work will be done in Impact. He smiles and tells Gia to have a nice day. A solid promo from Callis, as it always is. And again, he includes putting over Sami, right? That Sami is basically unhinged, unpredictable, a loose cannon, he's dangerous, etc. Which is what Sammy's going for, so Callis is sort of helping him out there.
Mm-hmm.
We then get a quick recap of the Myers-Cardona situation leading to their match. That is next, and that is Tennille Dashwood sort of suddenly paired up with Brian Myers to face Matt Cardona and a mystery partner, which they pretty much revealed, right? Scott D'Amore on Impact this past week said that Slammiversary could be a hot mess,
right?
He did
say that twice, though.
He did, but
it was either one or the other.
It was much more likely here, I think. Right. So the mystery partner is no mystery at all. It is, in fact, Cardona's real-life girlfriend, right? Chelsea Green. And it's funny because she is also in Ring of Honor right now, which I am watching and reviewing, and she's not cleared to wrestle, quote-unquote, for Ring of Honor. So it's interesting she's wrestling here. But each company can do their own story, right? So it's fine. So she's back to doing the hot mess character here, which I have to say I'm not super familiar with. I wasn't watching Impact at the time that she was doing this character, but I've heard good things. So I'm interested in seeing her here. A few things from this. Flatliner on the ramp by Myers to Cardona. Beal and Caleb are taking shots at Cardona as the ref is distracted. Obviously, they sort of get involved. And then Caleb's taking pictures of Cardona sort of suffering as they're... attacking him. Jumping DDT to Cardona at one point. Cardona counters a Meyer spear attempt into a spear of his own, and then finally tags in Rachel Green. Rachel Green? That's from Friends. Chelsea Green. Wow. It's a French character.
Yeah.
So yeah, they were sort of building up, like, holding off her getting into the ring for a little while, so she finally gets in. Tennille hits a low blow on Cardona, as she has done before, but he's one step ahead this time. He's wearing a cup. He takes it out to show us. Then he puts it over Meyer's face, which is kind of disgusting. Green hits a destroyer to Myers, a low blow with the cast to Dashwood, followed by the unprettier for the win in what was a very quick 6-minute match. What did you think of this?
It was okay. I think this is one of the ones I have watched. But
yeah, I don't blame you.
It wasn't really super interesting, but I guess it wasn't bad.
No, it was a 6-minute pay-per-view match that was fine, and they were basically looking to... designed to reintroduce Chelsea Green and provide her with a little bit of a showcase, right? They sort of hyped up her getting in the match. Then she did get some pretty good-looking offense. So the match had a decent pace to it, but at the end of the day, they weren't given very much time. So I think they did an okay job with what they had. I think it was just a vehicle to debut Green. It didn't feel much like a pay-per-view match other than Slammiversary, right? They've been hyping it as this is where surprises and people show up. So that is mm-hmm. one of their surprises. I would suggest not... as exciting as some of the other surprises that are coming. So then there's a video package summarizing the Morrissey Edwards situation. That's Eddie Edwards leading up to the match that will be next. Basically, things escalated between the two. Morrissey took out Eddie Edwards' friend and partner at the time, Kojima, to prove basically that no one will ever have your back in the wrestling business, and when you need him, he's not going to be there. So that's basically the story here. So we do get Morrissey and Eddie Edwards. Few things from that. Follow-away slam by Morrissey really easily to Eddie Edwards. Very strong, huge man. Morrissey boots Edwards over the ropes to the floor. There's a momentum shift when Edwards swings Morrissey's leg into the ring post on the outside. Edwards shoulder tackled off the apron into the barricade. Morrissey targets Edwards' heart, right? Because he's supposed to be the heart of Impact. So he's basically getting stomped and punched in the heart, and Morrissey's sort of mocking Edwards for being the heart of Impact at the same time. Edwards gets chokeslammed onto the apron that looked pretty good. Morrissey's backdrop on the ramp, and then he gets the Eddie Edwards does hit the Boston Knee Party, which is his finishing move. But the idea is he hits it on the outside. That's going to be of no use to him. He can't pin him there. I think it was an F5 by Morrissey, some sort of similar release type thing. Then we get another Boston Knee Party, but unfortunately the impact from it sends Morrissey out to the floor. So again, Eddie can't make the pinfall off his finisher. We get a sunset bomb by Eddie, then a blue thunder bomb for a near fall. Morrissey at some point pulls a chain from his boot, hits Eddie, and then hits a big power bomb and picks up the win after 11 minutes. What did you think of this, buddy?
This was fine. It was mostly Morrissey. I honestly don't remember too much from it, which I guess that maybe says something about it.
It probably does.
It was fine. I thought Morrissey was good, but...
Yeah, it was slow through sections, but that's kind of Morrissey's style, right? Is, again, he's the big man who doesn't need to... He can just take his time, hit a big move, take a bit more time sort of thing. I did like that Eddie was hitting his finisher a couple times, but neither in a situation where he could pin Morrissey, so that was a nice touch. I liked Morrissey targeting Eddie's heart a little bit. That was kind of interesting, a mockery there of his Heart of Impact status. I thought it was a pretty solid like heel monster versus high-energy underdog babyface, and I think the outcome I would have predicted, it's Morrissey's basically continuing his ascension up the card, I have a feeling, at this point. So I don't think it was a bad match. I don't think it was great either, but it was a solid, I guess. Moose then cuts a promo about Chris Sabin and their match before we get a brief vignette for the Drama King, which apparently is going to be Aiden English, which I'm kind of interested to see their take on his sort of, what is it, drama gimmick, like actor, musician, whatever it is. So that's kind of an interesting signing. Again, on the surface to me, that's a good fit for Impact, but I mean, it'll depend how they use him and how he looks, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So Gia talks to the winning super fan at ringside. I knew nothing about this, but Fulton and Shara come to the ring.
This was really random.
It did seem really random, and this match was really random.
I literally even asked you if you knew about it, because I haven't watched Impact, right? So
they come to the ring. Commentary tell us they're angry about being barred from ringside for the Ultimate X match that opened the show. So Scott D'Amore comes out, says that instead of having security remove Fulton and Shara from the ring, he found a couple of guys ready to fight, and it's Finn Juice making their return from Japan, and they're going to have an impromptu match against Shara and Fulton. So basically, there's nothing going on here. This was pretty much a squash, right? There's an assisted Dudley Dog, basically, by Finn Juice for the win after a minute and 15 seconds. So this was simply to reintroduce Finn Juice, which is David Finlay and Juice Robinson from New Japan, provides fans with another surprise, I guess, right? It's not that they're debuting, but it is a surprise return, sort of. And again, they sort of push this as this is the pay-per-view with lots of surprises, so I guess that counts as another one. I don't think this helped the two big men, right, Fulton and Shara, because they come out here furious and lose to mystery opponents in, like, a minute.
Right,
so
it was really just... Like,
I feel a bit bad for Fulton, not so much for Shara, because he does absolutely nothing for me, especially wrestling.
Yeah,
but I don't think Fulton's terrible.
Like, after the whole thing, it was over in like less than a minute. I was like, what?
Yeah.
It was just one of those things.
It did not do them any favors.
A match
for
the sake of a match.
Kinda. Yep. Just to get, hey, we told you there'd be surprises. Finn Juice is back. Surprise. Right? Move on. Video recap of Moose and Sabin's issues leading up to this. And then we do get their match. We always say it, right? But Moose has the entrance of a star, right? He just looks like a star. The music, the lights, just the way he looks himself, everything. And then I just noticed Sabin looks so tiny next to Moose, right? Moose is a big guy, Sabin not so much. So a few things from this. Moose tweaks his leg on a missed running dropkick. So Sabin starts targeting that early on. The crowd energy, I made a note here, seemed a bit down for this match. It was really quiet at certain parts of this match. Moose does a nice lawn dart to Sabin into the second turnbuckle at one point. Moose also delivers his standing dropkick, but this time it's from the floor to Sabin, who's up on the apron, which was pretty impressive. Big Uranagi by Moose, followed by a power slam, and then he misses a moonsault from the top rope. Swinging DDT by Sabin at one point for a two count. Moose does his top rope fall-away moonsault slam that, for a man of his size, just looks ridiculous every time. It's fantastic. Sabin gets powerbombed onto the apron, then swung repeatedly into the barricade that looked pretty violent. I thought it made Moose look pretty strong here. Sabin then, surprisingly, after about a 12-minute match, wins with a victory roll. I would not have predicted this at all, but what did you... Do you remember much about this one?
Honestly, probably not a ton, but...
No, I thought it was pretty good. It definitely picked up as it went on. One of the issues might be, like, Moose kind of wrestles that deliberate style too, right?
All I remember is, like, the fall-away moonsault slam, like, but that's, like, pretty...
Yeah, one standard. Of his...
Yeah, I don't remember too much.
So his deliberate style might have taken the crowd out of it a bit early, because Morrissey kind of worked a similar style, right, a couple matches ago. So I don't know if that had something to do with it, but he got them back on track as his beatdown of Sabin sort of increased in brutality closer to the end. I really liked the final little bit of this match. Sabin did a really good job of playing the resilient, undersized underdog. Really surprised by the result. I would have bet money that Moose would pick up the win here. Some of Moose's offense looked really good against this much smaller competitor. So I'm not sure if this is an indication of Sabin like starting a singles push. I kind of hope not, or just a way to get a rematch. Well, if it's a victory
roll, kind of a sudden win, right?
It seems like maybe a rematch is coming up. Sabin just kind of, for me, lacks the character and charisma for a singles push, and Impact did try this already, right? He was their champion at one point. I mean, if they could pair him with an interesting like manager or mouthpiece, then maybe, but just by himself, I don't really buy him as a main eventer, but that's just me. So then we see Decay, who won the Knockouts tag team titles earlier. They send a message to Division in a quick little promo, and it just looks like Havoc is now officially part of this group, right? Because she wasn't until this point. And I honestly, this was one of these promos that kind of makes me cringe a little bit that Rosemary does. Like, it's just a bit too much for me. I don't know if you remember seeing it or not, but wasn't my favorite thing. We then get a recap package leading into the tag team title match, which is going to see four tag teams and another surprise entrant in this one. So it's Rich Swann and Willie Mack versus the Good Brothers versus the defending champions Violent by Design. And then we get Fala Ba, who normally teams with TJP, but TJP's unavailable. I don't think they said why, or I didn't catch why. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so the surprise partner for him is No Way Jose. Yeah. So they just call him No Way. I guess
No Way
is the new name now. So not one of my favorites. He comes out with the full Adam Rose treatment, right? With the whole bunch of people partying in a line behind him sort of thing. So that's one of the surprise entrants. You can tell by the sound of my voice, I was thrilled, obviously. I don't think he's bad. I just don't, it doesn't move the needle, right, as they say for me with him arriving.
Yeah. It's fine. But...
Right. So Doring and Rhino are representing Violent by Design for this one because they're kind of doing Freebird rules where they decide who's going to represent them. So it's those two today. I thought this match was pretty boring to start. There was some lame comedy stuff from Fala Ba and No Way, followed by just a bunch of basic Good Brothers stuff. And just by looking at the crowd, they seem to agree with me too. They weren't too into the beginning of this. But then they build to the Doring Gallows confrontation. It kind of gets interrupted by the rest of the guys. Then it's what I always call a signature parade, ending with Doring hitting his finishing sequence, which is a Death Valley driver where he keeps wrist control and then hits a short arm clothesline. That was for a near fall. Rhino sets up for a gore, but he's inexplicably kind of distracted by something outside the ring. So he obviously turns his attention for a second, turns right back into the Magic Killer. And the Good Brothers, of course, pick up the win.
I got spoiled on this like the night before. Yes. Whatever, I chuckled so.
Because you know I love the Good Brothers.
Yeah, I think we were watching Black Widow and I was looking on Instagram and I chuckled because it was like that and new.
Yes, so they already had a lengthy title run not long ago.
Boring match.
I did not, this was my least favorite match on this show.
This was, and we had a random 1 minute match. So like, right.
This was, other than the debut of No Way, there was just a bunch of standard stuff here. Most of the guys did their usual stuff. Nothing really of note. Like, I didn't feel anything was ramped up because this was a major pay-per-view. I really don't like the result because my feeling about Good Brothers is pretty well known at this point. They just kind of bore me, and I don't find they help anybody else along the way, right? They make themselves look good. They don't really make anyone else look good. They don't put anyone else over along the way, even in promos or anything. So I don't love them as champions. It was kind of a disappointing match. This was honestly the low point of the show, I think, for me.
Yeah, for sure. It was just... It was like there's just nothing interesting about
it. No, there it was pretty standard.
And the Good Brothers won.
Right. We then get a recap of Diana Perrazzo's run. Sort of, she's just been taking on everybody and beating everybody. So this, she even said she doesn't need to know who the opponent is to beat them. So she ends up, Gail Kim had come out and basically said that, fine, if you said you don't need to know who it is, you're going to face a mystery opponent at Slammiversary. So this is the match. And it's Diana Perrazzo versus the mystery opponent, who turns out to be, and this is one of the good surprises, I thought, turns out to be Thunder Rosa, which is pretty awesome. Honestly, right,
towards the end of her AEW tenure, like, she hasn't been around in a bit. No. But, like,
She's back on NWA.
Been better, right? Like, with the unsanctioned match. And
she's really good.
Even, like, so just some previous efforts. Like, so I think we've come to like her, right? So
I have, yeah, for sure. It was almost like a dream match, right? Because a lot of people consider, in ring-wise, these are two of the best women going. So I was quite happy with this surprise by Impact here. So we get technical wrestling to start. It's kind of to a stalemate, as both of them are super talented in the ring. The crowd is definitely re-engaged for this match after losing some steam in that tag match before this. We get a nice running dropkick to the back of Perrazzo's head as she's sort of in the ropes that looked really painful. Thunder Rosa's in control early, and commentary tell us that Diana's sort of feeling out Rosa, and I like this story. I'll get into it when I sort of talk about the match as a whole, but I do like the storyline that's sort of running through this match. We get a nice hesitation dropkick to a seated Diana in the corner by Thunder Rosa. Top rope double stomp to Perrazzo's back by Rosa. And then basically Thunder Rosa dominated much of this match, right? And then there's the basically Perrazzo suddenly hits her Queen's Gambit, which is one of several moves she's used, which is one of the things I like about her. She has several different moves that she's ended matches with. So Perrazzo does hit the Queen's Gambit and picks up the sudden victory in just
That's over the fairy tale ending, 10 minutes. It's like the same move.
I think. What did you think of this?
I like this. It was good. I like Perrazzo was good, and Rosa's, like we said, I like her now. So yeah, this was good. I honestly just can't remember specifics because like I didn't take notes on it, but like I liked it. Yeah,
I'm here for specifics. You're here for your general overall impression. So after the match, Mickie James comes out to invite Perrazzo to NWA's Empower Women's Show, which Mickie James is in charge of sort of setting up. Perrazzo tells her, She basically doesn't like that Mickie James has sort of interrupted this moment. So she tells Mickie to grab her trash bag and leave for interrupting her. Which, right, is a reference to WWE sending Mickie after she'd been released all of her belongings in a trash bag. So Mickie kicks Diana. Diana escapes, basically, and that's where we left that. So I would love to see Perrazzo in that Empower show. I will probably watch that. So I really like this match. I really like the story of this match. Because Perrazzo often dominates her competition, right? But for this match, she was largely dominated by Thunder Rosa and kind of had to find a way to win. And that makes sense because Perrazzo wasn't prepared at all due to this being a mystery opponent, right? So she took a while to figure out how to deal with Thunder Rosa. And meanwhile, on the flip side, Rosa has the advantage because she knows exactly who she's going to face, right? And was able to prepare for Perrazzo.
And Thunder Rosa's like not, she's not like a low card talent.
No, she's awesome. So Perrazzo kind of bides her time and tries to just survive Thunder Rosa, and then takes control, tries to go after Rosa's arm to set up her finishers because she has multiple like finishers that target the arm. Can't get anywhere with that. So she has to shift gear and hit one of her alternate finishers, which I thought was a cool story. So Thunder Rosa got a ton in this match. She really got to showcase her stuff. Perrazzo got to work kind of a different match from what she has been because she did get dominated for much of this. I thought both of these women looked really good here. I really enjoyed this match. I think Perrazzo continues to show how she can work any style with basically anyone. And I think it's going to lead to her being in that NWA women's show. And I think that she's a great addition to that.
Mm-hmm.
They then announced Bound for Glory is going to be in Las Vegas.
And it featured the AEW,
right.
New Japan and AAA logo. So
that's
they're
right.
Kind of advertising this as like a big
like
deal.
Like a crossover show.
Whole promotion show.
Yeah, so that sounds pretty I'm already more interested because of that, right? Just to see people I don't know and multiple sort of companies being represented. So that's cool. We then get a video package summarizing the events leading to the Omega Callahan main event, and that is Sami Callahan versus Kenny Omega for the Impact Wrestling Championship. And this was made a new no DQ match, which I remember saying, gonna eat my words, I think when I was talking about it last week, I was disappointed because they're sort of making it Sammy's match, and I would like to see Sammy do something different.
Right.
I'm pretty happy with the DQ match, I think. So this match was crazy. Sammy attacks Kenny from behind right away, hits a pile driver in the first few seconds for a near fall. We get chairs, garbage cans brought into the ring early by Sammy. He gets a fork. He swings it, or goes to stab Kenny, misses, and it gets stuck in the top turnbuckle for a little bit. Sammy, this was pretty graphic, right? Takes a pizza cutter and just runs it across Omega's forehead repeatedly a few different times. And Kenny is now a bloody mess after that. It looked pretty awesome, I'm not going to lie. And I'm not the biggest blood and crazy violence guy, but when it's done creatively and stuff, I get into it.
Right.
Don Callis at this point swears on commentary, which I make a note of, right? Because he criticizes the crowd later for chanting things with swearing in it. Meanwhile, he swore himself on commentary. Callis is putting over that Kenny is basically a fish out of water in a no DQ match, right? Like, he's at a disadvantage. This isn't his match. This is Sammy's match, which is all fair points to make. We get a nice Death Valley driver by Sammy. Suicide dive, but there's a trash can lid put up by Kenny, and so Sammy dives right into it. We get baking trays, a wet floor sign. Omega uses those to hit Sammy in the head some more. We get a moonsault with the trash can. I don't think Omega hit it very well. They kind of commentary tried to sell it as hitting Callahan's ankle. Maybe it did, but it wasn't as clean as it could be for sure. Omega, sends Callahan into a chair set up in the turnbuckles, and now Sammy is bleeding from the head as well. Omega then takes the fork out of the turnbuckle and uses it on Callahan's head. Sammy chops the ring post a bit later, and then Kenny suplexes him onto the apron. It looked good. Kenny puts a table on top of Sammy on the floor, and then goes up onto the apron and hits a double stomp onto the table, onto Sammy, which looked cool. Table gets set up on the floor. Kenny eventually gets pile driven through a table. We like this toss, right? Sammy throws a trash can lid from the floor, like across the ring.
He pulls it and like throws it into the ring and
perfectly hits him in the back. Callahan sets up a board in the corner. Sammy side slams Kenny onto a trash can like that was set up. So he slammed him onto the bottom of the trash can. That looks to me like the most painful part, if you will. It's like the apron of the ring. It's the hardest part of the trash can. He power bombs Omega through the board for a power two count. Yeah. Sammy gets a chair wrapped in barbed wire that he had hidden under the steps. We get a V-trigger, Kataro Crusher, and a power bomb onto the barbed wire chair by Kenny Omega. This match is crazy. Kenny then piles a bunch of debris. It was like chairs and garbage cans and lids in the middle of the ring. Takes Sammy up top, superplexes him onto this pile of stuff. Then we get a tombstone to Kenny onto the barbed wire chair a little bit later. It's just madness. Powder's thrown into Sammy's eyes. He's blinded, so he accidentally grabs the referee and pile drives him, thinking it's Kenny. And then a second ref comes in and he punches out the second ref as well. The Good Brothers then, of course, come out, but Chris Sabin and Eddie Edwards show up to sort of chase them away before they can get involved. We get a package pile driver to Omega for another really near fall. We now get some thumbtacks. They're thrown into Sammy's face. He takes a big V-trigger. Kenny loads up his knee pad with tacks, hits another V-trigger for two. Crazy. Tacks go into Sammy's mouth. Another V-trigger with the tacks in his mouth. A one-winged angel onto the tacks for the win in what was just about 20 minutes of an absolute car crash. As Kenny, Callis, and the Good Brothers celebrate, the Bullet Club theme hits and...
It's
your boy, Jay White, comes out. Wide. What a surprise this was.
He used the Bullet Club theme.
He stands on the ramp briefly, makes his way to the ring. Omega's crew offers up the two sweet, like it's this sort of, is he here and part of this group?
I find that interesting because he was never in the Bullet Club with them.
But I think they're like, it's like we're all extended members of this similar family.
Well, and it could be heel logic, I guess, right? And, but maybe that's just like...
And not even heel logic, it's them going, oh crap, this guy's here and he's a killer, let's try and befriend him right away.
And I think that's kind of funny because like I just said, they were never actually in Bullet Club together, but they wouldn't care.
No.
Right? They're just trying to like...
We want them on our side.
They're weaselly little heels.
Get to them before anyone else does.
And for those who don't know, Jay White's the New Japan's and never openweight champion at the moment. Right. And so I remember how it goes because I watched the Bullet Club recount thingies that New Japan's put out like a million times.
Right.
And I think it was when the Elite Bullet Club, kind of part of Bullet Club, we're feuding with the BCOGs, which is like Gorillas of Destiny and Bad Luck Falling, whatever. And so Omega tried to recruit Jay White, but then he turned on him. But then Jay White eventually led Bullet Club, but with the BCOGs. So there's kind of, there is history between White and Omega, right, which I think is interesting.
So they're all looking for Jay White to two sweep, hand gesture, whatever with them. And he does not react at all. He's just standing there. So no decision made. And the show goes off the air. So leaving you with a little bit of a cliffhanger as well, which I thought was cool. What did you think of this match, buddy? Any thoughts?
I like the match. It was a car crash of a match, and Sammy was in his element.
Yes.
But Omega held up as well. I think the finish was perfect. It was the finisher that's unkickoutable onto the most unkickoutable thing you have of all time, which is thumbtacks. After you've
been beaten to death for half an hour, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sometimes don't enjoy these types of matches, but I thought this was fantastic. Honestly, brutal, bloody match. I surprisingly preferred to the Moose Omega match that I was probably looking more forward to, but I found that one a bit disappointing, and this one really over-delivered. These guys sacrificed themselves in a number of crazy ways, weapons and tacks and all kinds of stuff. So many crazy moves taken and delivered by each of these guys. It was hard to take my eyes off this to even take notes. It over-delivered in a huge way for me, and I kind of apologize for doubting Sammy's ability to make this feud and main event match work. I pretty much loved this match and was thoroughly entertained. Like, I'm saying this is my second must-see match on this card, and this is an Impact show. So I'm super happy to say this because I don't always love their stuff, but I want them to be good. So there's two matches I think people need to go out of their way to see. Great job by both of these guys. A car crash of a match, but super enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
So my overall thoughts on this show, I don't know if you want to quickly give it a grade or not, but you seem to be like,
Yeah, so I liked the opener. It was really good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. The mixed tag was fine. The four-way tag was not good. The other tag match that was a minute long was
right,
a minute nothing long.
Perrazzo's match was...
I liked, yeah, the women's match was good, and the main event was also really good.
Yeah.
I'd probably give this like an A- just because my expectations were highly exceeded, just because I've... Yep. Not really loved many of their pay-per-views lately.
We watched this top to bottom too, which I don't often do with Impact. I usually watch what I can, and then something comes up and I go back to it.
I haven't particularly loved any of their recent offerings. Mm-hmm. I haven't even watched them full just because I didn't really want to. And this one I watched in one sitting. So I think that's a testament to this.
It is. This pay-per-view, I think, was bookended for me by two amazing matches. The opening Ultimate X and the main event, No DQ.
If you're just checking out Impact, this is like a good place to start, right?
So completely different matches, but both were incredibly entertaining. Impact also delivered on its promises for surprises, I think. You got Thunder Rosa, Jay White, Chelsea Green, No Way Jose, right? So obviously, I think Rosa and Jay White are bigger gets. And I'm not sure if Rosa, that might just be a one-off, right? But in between the two matches that I love, there was some good stuff. Myers, Tennille, Cardona, Green was like a fine little mini match, I guess, to reintroduce Chelsea Green. Morrissey, Edwards was a pretty good monster underdog match. Moose Sabin was enjoyable with a surprise finish for sure. And I like the Knockouts title match. The only disappointing thing that was the four-way tag match. I thought it offered nothing memorable, kind of a repeat title reign for a team that I don't really care about. So that was my low point on the show. I thought the pay-per-view was worth my time, even if just for the opener and the main event and the Peraza-Rosa match. And then there was some other decent stuff in between. It was kind of like just gravy at that point, right? Because I'm already happy with the show. So, we watched it in one sitting, and I enjoyed myself almost throughout. I think this show was a big success for Impact. The return of a crowd definitely added something for probably most of these matches, if not all of them. So I, like you, I'm giving this an A- because... The opener and the main event just bring up the average so far, right? Because I thought those were extraordinary matches people should go out and see. So I think this gave its viewers a strong product here. And I was happy that we sat and watched this. Not to say too much, but much happier with this pay-per-view than another one that we watched the next day, right? So we'll be talking about that one a bit later. So again, I always try and say, here's something you should go out of your way to see. It is the Ultimate X match. It is the No DQ main event for the Impact Championship on this
show. Maybe watch the women's match.
Yeah, the women's match is good too. So a very strong pay-per-view offering from Impact, which I'm very happy to report. So I think that's going to wrap this up because, again, got a lot of podcast episodes to work on today.
Yeah, we do.
So thank you for giving us any time to listen to this. I would love to hear any feedback, especially when it comes to Impact stuff, ROH stuff. because I'm never sure if people are enjoying it or what they'd like to hear.
How hot topic that is.
So if you'd like to contact us, fnswrestling@gmail.com, fns_wrestling_podcast on Instagram, or leave a comment in YouTube and I'll get back to you for sure, no matter which way you contact us. So thanks for spending a little bit more time listening to us talk about wrestling. And we hope you'll give us a listen on any of the future shows coming up. And until then, take care.
Peace out.